As a small business owner, there's one word that you absolutely dread: payroll. For small businesses, it's a big burden. You may think you're saving time and money doing it yourself, but come on, are you? Timesheets, processing checks, calculating taxes, a total waste of your time. Paychex simplifies payroll processing, saving you time and money. Submit your payroll online, fax it in, or call your dedicated Paychex payroll specialist, and you're done. Learn more at trypaychex.com. Come on, do the math. The IRS dishes out 8 million penalties a year. Make one mistake and you're on the hook. On average, you're losing nearly one business day every month doing payroll. That's time and money you'll never get back, unless you get Paychex. More than 500,000 small businesses already do. Call 877-649-5324. Trade payroll pressure for peace of mind. Call now. 877-649-5324. That's 877-649-5324.
From the campus of Yale University, this is Business Talk with Jim Campbell, nationally syndicated across the country on the Biz Talk Radio Network and coming to you from our flagship stations, Yale Radio WYBC and 1490 AM WGCH Greenwich. All talk and all business, 60 minutes of radio with leading figures from the world of business along with the business of politics and sports. Conversations with the most prolific serial killer in Connecticut history, the New Britain Strip Mall Murders, with an expert on serial killers. That's today on Business Talk with Jim Campbell. Ann K. Howard has a blog on serial murders in Connecticut, and she's a practicing attorney, and she's on for the second time with us. How are you, Ann?
I'm doing great. How are you, Jim?
Good, and thanks for coming in studio as well.
Thank you.
Okay, tell us, what the heck got you interested in serial killers to begin with? Not the actual, you know, hobby that most folks have.
Right. And yet, you know, it's surprising how many women in my age bracket I come across who are so fascinated by serial killers.
I think everybody is, actually.
True that. And so, you know, I've always been a voracious true crime reader all my life. Adore Anne Rule and Joe McGinnis and all the greats. And I wanted to write true crime when we moved to Connecticut. And I started that blog about some unsolved murders not far from my home. And as I was writing that blog, a few months into it, I kept noticing in the news feed that these stories about seven bodies being found behind a busy strip mall in a suburb of Connecticut kept coming up in the news feed. And the fact that there was this guy out there at the time, that was back in 2015, who had committed these crimes and left these bodies behind the mall and had not been found yet was extremely intriguing to me. And I decided this will be my next book.
Okay, now you've been covering other murders in Connecticut as well. You spent some time on the Cheshire home invasion murders, which is a nationally known story. How did you happen to glom in and pick this guy to be the guy that you wrote about?
You know, it had all of the markings of a golden opportunity for me, Jim, in terms of the fact that he was already, at the time he was named as a suspect in these crimes, which was May of 2015, he was already in prison for 15 years. Now, that's good news for me because, number one, I'm safe.
Yeah.
And I can possibly gain access to him and start interviewing him, which is just what happened. I wrote to him in July of 2015, a couple months after he was named as a person of interest, and immediately he wrote back. What transpired after that was hundreds of pages of letters from him, many prison visits, many phone calls.
Wow.
And what also was perfect about this case to write about was that there was already a trial transcript regarding the first murder that he had been convicted of. Now, keep in mind, he was in jail for one of the seven murders. And so throughout our three-year relationship, author-subject relationship, the remaining, yes, I need to emphasize that, the remaining six murders were still open.
Right, so he couldn't really confess those to you at the time, right?
He could not, no. And we used to discuss even early on what we refer to as the elephant in the room, which was the fact that he had been charged with these heinous crimes. And
there was a heck of a lot of evidence.
six out of seven DNA samples in that infamous murder mobile that he drove around, where it turned out all seven of his victims
were
killed.
Which was a blue van that he drove around. What does the garden mean, by the way? I should say the name of the book is His Garden, Conversations with a Serial Killer.
His garden is the alleged name that he called his burial ground. So back in 2014...
Which is behind this strip mall.
Exactly. It's 15 acres of state-owned forest behind this strip mall. Very swampy earth, no trespassing signs anywhere, so you're not going to get any hikers or hunters out there. And so he told another jailhouse inmate in 2014, when he confessed these crimes to them, that he called this place his garden, where he buried the seven bodies.
Let me ask you a question to digress for a second. You had spoken with Stephen Hayes, who was one of the two guys in the Cheshire Home Invasion murders, along with Joshua Komisarzewski.
Mm-hmm.
We've covered that a lot here. The family, Bill Pettit went to Dartmouth, where I went, so the whole thing hits kind of home.
Mm-hmm.
Have you been in touch with or know what's going on with those guys at all since then?
Interesting you should ask me that. I just got a letter from Stephen Hayes.
Really?
The other day.
You
yes.
have all these guys writing you, eh?
I know. I've heard from Joshua as well since we last spoke, but he is a much more private man. Stephen Hayes is a man who is, in my opinion, obsessed with his celebrity status.
Really?
It's sickening. It really is. That he has a notoriety for being lawsuit happy. And wanting to, he sued attorneys. Yes, and from prison about, for example, that he was not allowed a Jewish Orthodox diet in prison. And he wrote to me to tell me that somehow he'd gotten a hold of this book and read it. And I referenced in my book, His Garden, Conversations with a Serial Killer, I did reference my death row visit with Stephen Hayes.
Yeah.
And that Hayes had told me that he blacked out.
Yes.
When raping and killing poor Mrs. Pettit. And and he told me in this letter, I just got it about 2 weeks ago, that if we cannot come to some kind of a financial settlement about my mentioning that in the book, that he will have to consider suing me for
what a scumbag. A complete. I've always wondered in that case, these were low life, low time hoods to do that kind of a horrific, violent murder, raping young girls, killing. Hey, Komisarzewski, he struck me as the bad guy in this. Was that?
I think he was the mastermind.
The mastermind.
I think he was the genius behind it. I think he was also the one who was motivated to get into that home, not just for money. I mean, Stephen Hayes was there for drug money.
Okay.
And Joshua was
there for sexual.
Exactly. It was more fantasy based. But, it was very disturbing to read that letter from Stephen Hayes, because my thought was this man should be down on his knees.
He should have been executed, by the way. That's the.
I'm not arguing with you on that, Jim.
let's go. So tell us, who is William Devon Howard?
Well, he is a Virginia native, born in 1970, had a relatively traditional upbringing, kind of a blue-collar family. Father was a machinist. Mother worked some part-time jobs in the school cafeteria. She was part of the PTO, active in his childhood events. He claims there was no abuse in the home. He did get spanked a lot. In the book I write, maybe he got spanked a little bit too much by his mother. But I don't think that contributed to this man becoming a serial killer. It wasn't until he was 12 years old, I think, that things went downward for Howell. His mother was diagnosed with breast cancer. And she underwent the radiation, chemo, mastectomy surgeries. And when he was 15, his mother had a series of strokes and died. And I think that had a very traumatic effect on him, in that at the age of 14, at the height of his mother's medical crisis, that was when Howell first solicited a prostitute on the streets of Newport News, Virginia, in the red light district. 14 years old. And he told me that after that, he became addicted.
Really?
to soliciting prostitutes. And I think that was all part of what I write about in this book, an intense sexual addiction that only grew over time and then got coupled with rage and powerlessness and formed into a sexual sadism, a paraphilia.
One of the things about his mother is that he felt powerless, I guess, because she couldn't move, and she asked him to get a gun so she could shoot herself. So that may be some of the trauma, right? That this rage that he couldn't deal with, and
I think so, because you know, when he told me that story, I saw a human side to a serial killer.
Yeah.
And I write about that throughout the book, this unbelievable disconnect that I have experienced in the last 3 years between someone who appears to be a kind and compassionate good person and then the atrocities that he committed.
And he's a sociable guy, right?
Very friendly.
Why did he, with the last 3 seconds, why did he choose to confide in you? Because he just, you came to him and he needed to...
I think it's because I was not your typical reporter. You know, I was a lawyer who was not interested in cracking the case, in getting the front page scoop for tomorrow's headline. There was no pressure. So I think he felt reassured that I genuinely wanted to get to know this man as a human being, as an FBI profiler might do, to try to, you know, investigate further into the psychological and emotional motives behind his crimes. So I think he did not feel pressured. I think he felt safe.
All right, listen to Business Talk with Jim Campbell over the Biz Talk Radio Network. 350 stations around the country. Go to biztalkradio.com. Find the closest one to you. Listen over the internet. Access our podcast. We'll talk about 7 murders in 9 months when we get back.
We paid less for our Craftmatic today than we did 20 years ago.
If you're still searching for the perfect solution to a good night's sleep, call now for prices and free information on today's Craftmatic adjustable beds. And then decide when you see how little they cost. Rated number one by consumers nationwide on ConsumerAffairs.com. Craftmatic beds come in all mattress types, including cool gel memory foam, for up to 50% less than today's leading memory foam brand. Enjoy temporary relief of low back pain, poor circulation, nighttime heartburn, mild arthritis. You'll sleep better in a Craftmatic adjustable bed. So if you're still searching for the perfect solution to a good night's sleep, call now for prices and information, and then decide when you see how little they cost. Discover Craftmatic for less, up to 50% less than today's leading memory foam brand.
Call 1-800-316-5271. That's 1-800-316-5271. 1-800-316-5271. Call now.
If you missed open enrollment for Obamacare and are without health insurance, I have good news for you. Hello, this is Carrie Hall, America's healthcare advocate and the president of Benefits by Design. The federal government has reopened enrollment for Obamacare health insurance beginning March 15th, which means you can apply for health insurance with one of our licensed exchange certified agents who will walk you through the process to see if you qualify for a subsidy that could pay for all or part of your health insurance. And how much does using one of our licensed agents cost you? Nothing. That's right, it costs you nothing, and we're there to help you 24/7 after you enroll. So don't miss this second chance. Call 913-385-2224. That's 913-385-2224, or online at americashealthcareadvocate.com. Once again, that phone number, 913-385-2224, or online at americashealthcareadvocate.com.
Tired of paying outrageous prices for Viagra? Well, we have great news for you. Now you can finally get Viagra at huge discounts. Healthy Man allows you to save up to $500 on Viagra. Why pay U.S. pharmacy prices of $15 per pill or more when you can get Viagra for less than $3 a pill? Call today and get 40 Viagra pills for only $99. This can cost as much as $600 at your local pharmacy. You can't afford not to call us. If you want Viagra at the lowest prices, never pay $15 a pill for
pharmacy prices again. Get Viagra for less than $3 a pill. Call 1-800-521-9579 today and save up to $500 and get 40 pills for just $99. Healthy Man is fast, easy, and affordable. Operators are waiting at 1-800-521-9579 to take your call right now. Call 1-800-521-9579. That's 1-800-521-9579. Again, 1-800-521-9579.
Here's important new information from the Diabetes Solution Center for you, a family member, or a loved one suffering with diabetes. If you have lost your provider, or if you need a provider for diabetic supplies, you may qualify to receive your diabetic testing supplies now with little or no out-of-pocket cost, regardless of your age. All you need is Medicare or private insurance to be potentially eligible. Call the Diabetes Solution Center right now for details. Just takes a couple of minutes. Our friendly, knowledgeable agents will give you free, no-obligation information, handle all the insurance paperwork, and make sure your supplies are delivered directly to your door for free.
Call U.S. Medical Supply 24 hours a day. 800-597-9323. 800-597-9323. 800-597-9323. Call right now. 800-597-9323.
Biz Talk Radio.
And we're back with Ann Howard, author of His Garden, Conversations with a Serial Killer, and about her time with William Devon Howard, who killed seven women in 9 months. And we're going to get into the similarities, and it's a very sad story. Many prostitutes, drug addicts. Mm-hmm. Did you become emotionally engaged with this guy? Did you view that as crossing a line? And he said that he would have committed suicide without you.
Yeah. You know, I did not view what turned out to be something of a friendship, believe it or not. I know it sounds crazy, and it is. It still strikes me as odd. But I did not view it as crossing a line so much as doing what was necessary for me to write the book, to get a true sense of who he was. If he saw me as an adversary, then he would never have opened up to me like he did, and he certainly would never have confessed all of his crimes to me after pleading guilty in September of 2017, as he did. So it was a means to an end, Jim.
Did he view you as basically his only friend by the time it was done?
He did, and he still does.
Still does. Has he read the book?
He has, and as I footnoted in the book,
yes.
This is one of those rare books where the footnotes are actually, I think, just as interesting as the text itself.
I read them. I wanted to see where he disagreed with you.
Yes.
First off, I think it's bizarre. It's almost like he said, well, why wouldn't you be writing a good book about me? I only killed seven people, you know.
I am still confounded by that when he finally got the manuscript before I sent it to the publisher, as I promised him I would do so, he, in fairness, he would have a say to correct any inaccuracies or give his side, that he was outraged when he read the book and he hated it. And I just thought to myself, what on earth did he think I was writing? Anne of Green Gables?
Not only that, you humanized him in some ways, too.
Well, if anything, I think many readers would argue that I went too easy on this man.
And it's funny, you get the sense that he's totally dishurt by what you wrote, but yet you also feel he still feels very close to you as a friend.
Yeah, he has since forgiven me for this book. and I think actually this book was something like looking in the mirror for him. I think that's why he was so outraged.
He doesn't have any real insight to himself, does he?
He does not. But surprisingly, since he read this book, which was a few months before it came out, it just came out July 10th. So he read it maybe in March or April, the rough manuscript. Mm-hmm. And at that time, he was in a very profound denial, I believe, regarding the evil of the deeds that he committed. Yeah. And I think when he read this book, it was like a whack to the head. My God, you know, seeing it in print. And gradually, as the months have passed since he's read the book, we have had conversations in which he indicates more and more to me that he gets that he has evil in him, that there is a monster inside of him, that he took away seven lives. Like, he's starting to realize this is absolutely devastated the lives of so many family members that he has affected down the line.
I know that in the book you quote him as saying, "I'm just a good guy with a bad habit." Mm. But it is a sense that he sort of rationalized to himself that these were bad girls. You know, they had problems. They'd rob you if they could because mm-hmm. they were drug addicts. And mm-hmm. so he kind of like he was doing his duty. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. And I think to this day, while he has consistently understated the heinous nature of his crimes, I think to this day, that is the one area where he still remains in abject denial, is that these women, six women and one man who is a transgender man who he thought was a woman when he picked him up, that these seven victims were human beings. They were complicated people. They had children. They had dreams. They had goodness in their hearts. They were drug addicted, and that's what led them to working the streets, but that they were human beings. To this day, he cannot accept that, the value of their lives. And I think if he were to accept it, then how could he possibly live with himself?
Yeah. And we're going to get into some of these victims, but do an overview first of what happened. And this is a big problem in this state and everywhere else. That, you know, mm-hmm. and you were describing, you take crack to get up, you take heroin to get down. There's a mm-hmm. drug sickness that comes if you don't get it, mm-hmm. and you have good people becoming completely desperate.
It's a nightmare. I mean, heroin addiction, this drug addiction, the opioid crisis in our country, the people who get involved with it, they live a daily nightmare. It's like hell on earth. And I hope I depicted that in the book regarding one of his victims, what her life was like in her final days on this earth. It's just very dark. That these women will walk into a stranger's van for a greasy $20 bill. That's how desperate they are. And I write in the book.
That's all they get, $20 for oral sex.
That's it, $20 to $30 on the streets, right. And, you know, there are two monsters in this book. There's the serial killer, and then there's the heroin epidemic. And people have asked me, well, did he hate prostitutes? Was it because his mother was a prostitute? Or, you know, they're trying to read too deeply into it. The hard, cold reality is that serial killers often prey on prostitutes. And the reasons are obvious. They're vulnerable prey.
They're desperate.
And I'm not
going
to walk into that van for $20. But if when you're a drug-addicted prostitute and you're not thinking clearly and you're desperate for your next fix, you will do that.
And apparently, you say law enforcement doesn't take missing prostitutes as seriously as they would take a missing housewife or something, or
Yeah, I think often that's the case. And certainly this case would have gotten so much more national profile if it were seven soccer moms that went missing and were found behind a strip mall. But I will say while many police departments can be apathetic in the face of this kind common type of crime where prostitutes go missing, often they say, well, she fell off the radar because she maybe overdosed or skipped town, or maybe she just is in prison in another state. To their credit, the police department that investigated this case and the first detective who really did, to me, just marvelous work, he's the guy wearing the white cowboy hat in this story, Detective Robert Derone, that they were very aggressive and investigative on this case. And I believe they did, especially Detective Derone, see these women as, this could be my daughter or my sister.
What do you attribute then to, there's like a 4-year gap before they find even the first murder, right? Is that right there? 2003?
Yeah, the first murder Howell was convicted of, he was arrested for in 2005, and he was sentenced in 2007 for the murder of Nilsa Arizmendi. Now, at that time, There were no bodies found behind the strip mall
right.
when he was sentenced for that murder. They had not found her body. There was just a drop of her blood in his van. And he was the last person seen with this woman. So that's what led to him getting a 15-year sentence, which was done under the Alford plea. He did not agree that he was guilty. He more or less said the prosecution has enough evidence to get beyond reasonable doubt. There was a great time gap.
All right, we'll get back to the rest of the victims in our next segment.
Attention investors. Respected names in the financial services industry are not evaluating if there will be a significant market downturn, but when. Higher interest rates and prospects of a trade war suggest the stock market is headed into a perilous direction. Subprime mortgages, which are back, could potentially devastate the real estate market, as they did before. And with stocks simply overdue for a fall after this second longest bull run in history, even bullish analysts are recognizing these indicators that equities are in big trouble and have projected stock market losses up to 40%. You can protect your IRA or 401k for maximum safety and opportunity with physical gold and silver, as they are assets that remain genuine stores of value no matter what's happening in the marketplace. Call Augusta Precious Metals today at 855-858-5806. That's 855-858-5806 to get your free guide to precious metals investing. Call Augusta Precious Metals today at 855-858-5806. That's 855-858-5806.
If you're 85 or younger, would you like peace of mind and comfort for your family? We're Final Expense Direct with an urgent message for you. The average funeral today costs over $8,000, but the most you'll get from government benefits is $255. How will your family pay the difference? We can help. Our senior plans start as low as just a dollar a day and pay up to $30,000 for a funeral and other final expenses. Peace of mind is easy. There's no medical exam. You'll have lifetime coverage, and your plan can't be canceled as long as you pay your premiums. Call now for free information about our senior plans. Answer a few simple questions and receive approval right on the phone. Plus, call right now and we'll give you a discount prescription card for free. Call 800-569-3414. That's 800-569-3414. Again, 800-569-3414.
As a small business owner, there's one word that you absolutely dread: payroll. For small businesses, it's a big burden. You may think you're saving time and money doing it yourself, but come on, are you? Timesheets, processing checks, calculating taxes, a total waste of your time. Paychex simplifies payroll processing, saving you time and money. Submit your payroll online, fax it in, or call your dedicated Paychex payroll specialist. And you're done. Learn more at TryPaychex.com. Come on, do the math. The IRS dishes out 8 million penalties a year. Make one mistake and you're on the hook. On average, you're losing nearly one business day every month doing payroll. That's time and money you'll never get back. Unless you get Paychex. More than 500,000 small businesses already do. Call 877-649-5324. Trade payroll pressure for peace of mind. Call now. 877-649-5324. That's 877-649-5324.
Due to an upturn in the economy, Main Street Business Loans has pre-approved the release of millions of dollars in small business funding. Your business may already be pre-approved to receive up to $250,000. We've sent out millions of pre-approval letters. We see the economy growing, and our underwriters believe now is the time to invest in your business so you can grow faster and make more money. And we're prepared to give you up to $250,000 to do it. Your funds can be available in 5 days. There are no application fees, no annual fees, just quick access to up to $250,000. If your business did not receive your approval letter to get up to $250,000, call Main Street Business Loans Approval Desk now.
800-430-7570. 800-430-7570. 800-430-7570. That's 800-430-7570.
Does your water stain and damage your fixtures? Does it smell or taste bad? Are you worried about what's in your water? Water quality should not be painful and worrisome. Get HydroCare Water Systems from Wave Home Solutions with the most advanced purification technologies. Call Wave Home Solutions today at 1-888-989-WAVE or go to greathealthywater.com. HydroCare will eliminate lime scale that causes hundreds of dollars in damage to pipes and appliances without using salt. Well water will no longer smell or stain your fixtures. City water will be purified of harmful chlorine, lead, arsenic, and chemicals. Wave Home Solutions provides the cleanest, healthiest water at every faucet. Satisfaction guaranteed. For more information, call 1-888-989-WAVE, 1-888-989-WAVE, or go to greathealthywater.com. That's greathealthywater.com.
Wave Home Solutions for a healthy, comfortable home.
Biz Talk Radio.
And we're back with Ann Howard. She's a practicing attorney and also become an expert on serial killers. Let me ask you, there's this big gap before the bodies are uncovered. We talked about the first one. Tell us how they eventually were uncovered. And also, what's he doing in that interim period? Because it would appear that he's not compulsively having to murder people, right? Mm-hmm. There's a gap in there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, the killing spree took place between February 2nd of 2003 and mid-October of 2003. So we're just talking a short nine-month period. And the question is, you know, did he have other victims prior to February of 2003? He very well could have. He could have in Connecticut. He could have in places like North Carolina, where he lived, Virginia, where he lived and grew up, and even Florida for a time where he lived. So,
but he didn't confess any of that to you, right?
He did not. And what he told me, Jim, and I don't know if I believe this. Can you trust a serial killer? I don't know. You tell me. But that there was something particular to that terrible, ghastly murder mobile. It was a 1985 Ford Econoline van. And he lived out of that van. And he kept all of his lawn care equipment, because he was a landscaper, in that van. And he would park it in grocery store public parking lots at night and bed down for the night. And he tells me that living that lifestyle, owning that van, lent itself to that nine-month killing spree, because he was accountable to nobody, number one. And, of course, he was driving around in a death chamber, in a torture chamber. So he had the vehicle where all of these crimes were committed. Now, police seized that vehicle in April of 2004, once they were on to him and suspecting him of the first murder that he was convicted of. They seized that vehicle, and he was simultaneously incarcerated. After the killing spree, there is just one more window of time that I'm very interested in, which is when he was released from that probation violation in July of 2004 until he was arrested on Friday the 13th of May of 2005. So we're talking about, you know, a 8 or 9 month period where he was down south driving that van. And again, because everything happened in that van, it does make me wonder. Regarding the gap between when these crimes took place, after the killing spree ended, allegedly, in October of 2003, the first three bodies were not found until August of 2007. So we're talking a four-year time period where those bodies were behind the strip mall and nobody knew. And a hunter was out. He was not allowed to be there. He was trespassing. You're not allowed to hunt in that forest back there. And he came across a skull. And he notified the police department that he had found this skull. It was within a few weeks after that that the police were able to excavate and find in these shallow graves 50 bones belonging to three separate victims. Then we're talking another, let's see, not another 8 year time period between 2007 and 2015. Every year, the police would go out and annually
in the same area.
And they do line searches, the local police department. At one point, the FBI got involved, and their cadaver dogs were given to this New Britain Police Department on loan. And it was with the help of those cadaver dogs that the remaining four victims were found in May of 2015. But also what helped them to finally discover those remaining four victims was that when William Devin Howell confessed his crimes to a jailhouse inmate in 2014, he actually drew this man a diagram with the location of where each of the graves was located. It was actually in a three-quarter of an acre plot within that 15 acres of forest.
Pretty and, close to the mall, right? Because he just put them down the hill and then...
Yep, just a few hundred yards away from the mall. And that's something that really still boggles my mind, is the audacity of this man that... When he dropped those bodies into the ravine and then dragged them out to the burial ground, it was always in broad daylight. And the strip mall was very busy, you know.
Do you have any sense of why he suddenly stopped in that October? And
he claims that at that time he moved down south. I know, and he was living with friends.
Okay, so he was no longer in that van the whole time.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, look at some of these, and these women, mainly prostitutes. And one of the interesting things, right, is he killed them only when he had a day off from landscaping.
Isn't that random and crazy?
Yeah.
Yep, he didn't want it to interfere with his work schedule. He does have a diligent work ethic.
Yeah,
I'll give him that. Yeah.
Melanie Ruth Camellini from Waterbury, and I guess she was hooked on heroin. But he sliced her fingertips off, removed her jaw, right?
Yeah, he did. Fortunately, it was post-mortem. You know, that wasn't part of the crime itself. But, yeah, what he would do with these poor women was he would pick them up after the bars had closed at, you know, 1 or 2 in the morning on the streets of some of the inner-city areas surrounding Hartford, Connecticut, and he would repeatedly rape them for 12-hour time periods in between the rapes.
By the way, that seemed like real torture, too. Is it not typical? Is it typical for a serial killer to rape somebody for 10 hours?
I know it has happened with serial killers, but no, I think that all goes to his sexual sadism, and I've had people say to me, is he a nymphomaniac?
Yeah, what is it?
You know, I mean, who does that for a 12-hour period over and over?
And he had girlfriends at the time.
Simultaneously, he always had a very active sex life with his girlfriends on the side. So, yeah, again, we go to the sexual addiction. And so it would be a total of 7 or 8 rapes that he would commit before finally killing them to conceal the evidence.
And brutally in some cases. He sliced the fingertips off for fingerprints?
What? Right. When he, and the reason he tells me he strangled all of his victims was simply to conceal the evidence, he states, that he got no pleasure out of the actual act of killing. It was a totally utilitarian thing that he had
meaning
do.
That he didn't want to get caught for rape.
Exactly, yeah.
So he figured that murdering would be safe.
Right. Well, he did know they'd go and tell the police, and he really struggled, he tells me, with his first victim, Melanie Camellini. Can I do it? Can I do it? He really hesitated, but then he overcame that sensibility and realized
I was kind of surprised. Maybe this is sick. How quickly you can strangle somebody.
2 to 7 minutes.
And so, I thought it was even shorter than that.
Yeah, no, I think it's about 2 to 7 minutes. That's based on the limited research I've done. But, and I wrote in the book at the time, my husband had been diagnosed with cancer at the time I was getting to know this serial killer. And thank God he's okay now. But, he had an anaphylactic shock experience where he was choking. And I asked the nurse, you know, how long to die? How long to choke to death? And that's how I found that out.
Marilyn Gonzalez, he put a hammer to her face to kill her and then kept her wrapped in the van for 2 weeks, which is where he was sleeping.
Yeah, actually, that was part of Jonathan Mills' statement to police, but Mills got that confused. According to the serial killer himself, he told me that all happened to the first victim, what you just referenced. And it's quite horrible to think about that. What he did, He hit her to the side of the face with a hammer, assuming that it would knock her out and kill her instantly.
Which it didn't.
Didn't even faze her. And so after strangling her, he went out to a forest to another location, not behind the mall, to bury her. But it was the dead of winter, and the ground was frozen. And so he couldn't dig a grave and get through the snow. He panicked. He didn't know, what am I going to do with this body?
So he put it back in the
and grave. So he wrapped it back, and she, because he had sliced off her fingertips and removed her jaw to try to evade detection, identification at a future date, she was bleeding profusely post-mortem, and she bled out in the back of his van. So a great deal of the blood that police later found was soaked into that plywood was hers. What he then did is he put her body in a plastic barrel behind the strip mall, and he left it there for several months and went down south where the weather was warmer and returned in April a few months later, retrieved the body out of the barrel, and buried it.
And it just stayed in that barrel, and the body was still together,
right?
It wasn't decomposed.
No, it was frozen rigor mortis, and because it was in the barrel, the animals did not get at it.
Quickly, Danny Lee Wisnant was a guy.
Yes. And when William Devon Howell found out by removing this man's wig in the middle of a sexual transaction that it was a man and not a woman, he was furious. And he simply punched him out several times and promptly strangled him.
Our final segment coming up, we'll finish up with a serial killer.
If you missed open enrollment for Obamacare and are without health insurance, I have good news for you. Hello, this is Kerry Hall, America's healthcare advocate and the president of Benefits by Design. The federal government has reopened enrollment for Obamacare health insurance beginning March 15th, which means you can apply for health insurance with one of our licensed exchange certified agents who will walk you through the process to see if you qualify for a subsidy that could pay for all or part of your health insurance. And how much does using one of our licensed agents cost you? Nothing. That's right, it costs you nothing, and we're there to help you 24/7 after you enroll. So don't miss this second chance. Call 913-385-2224. That's 913-385-2224, or online at americashealthcareadvocate.com. Once again, that phone number, 913-385-2224, or online at americashealthcareadvocate.com.
Attention business owners and independent contractors. This is a money-saving message from Tax Mediation Services. If your business owes $20,000 or more in taxes, we can help you today, right now. Listen, dealing with the IRS is no picnic. It's an intimidating and extremely stressful process, and you don't want to go it alone. Our attorneys know every law, every tax break, and every possible opportunity to help you resolve and reduce your tax debt. And if you owe more than $20,000, you may be at the top of their hit list. So don't take your tax debt lightly, because it will not go away on its own. The IRS can seize your bank accounts, your home, and even shut down your business. Call our tax experts today at 1-800-285-4765 and let us deal with the IRS while you focus on your business. That's 1-800-285-4765. Again, 800-285-4765.
Tired of paying outrageous prices for Viagra? Well, we have great news for you. Now you can finally get Viagra at huge discounts. Healthy Man allows you to save up to $500 on Viagra. Why pay U.S. pharmacy prices of $15 per pill or more when you can get Viagra for less than $3 a pill? Call today and get 40 Viagra pills for only $99. This can cost as much as $600 at your local pharmacy. You can't afford not to call us. If you want Viagra at the lowest prices, never pay $15 a pill pharmacy prices again. Get Viagra for less than $3 a pill. Call 1-800-521-9579 today and save up to $500 and get 40 pills for just $99. Healthy Man is fast, easy, and affordable. Operators are waiting at 1-800-521-9579 to take your call right now. Call 1-800-521-9579. That's 1-800-521-9579. Again, 1-800-521-9579.
This
This alert just came in. This special announcement is for business owners and leaders of organizations who've been waiting for the right time to build. General Steel has made it impossible to wait any longer with rock-bottom prices that could save you thousands. That's right. General Steel, America's leader in pre-engineered structures, is offering buildings at prices you will never see again. Don't miss these prices. A 50 by 100 for under $30,000. You heard right. That's 5,000 square feet under $30,000. Manufacturers, if you need a larger building, try a 100 by 100 commercial building for $129,000. You can't afford to rent with these prices. Imagine a 70 by 100 foot church building for under $69,000. With the economy improving and interest rates still at historic lows, you can't afford to wait.
Call 800-605-5370. 800-605-5370. Call 800-605-5370.
Who did you let down today? Your wife? Your kids? Well, how about yourself? Take a look in the mirror. If you're tired of your drug and alcohol problem, you need to fix the problem and right now, before you hurt or kill yourself, or worse yet, somebody else. Call the addiction specialist now at the Detox and Treatment Helpline, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. If you have private insurance, we specialize in finding you the right treatment. When you call right now, you'll speak to a recovering addict who understands what you're going through right now. Let us help you break your addiction to drug and alcohol before it's too late. This call is completely confidential and free. So if you have private insurance, take 5 minutes of your time. Call right now. I promise it'll change your life.
Call now. 800-390-2470. 800-390-2470. 800-390-2470. Call right now. That's 800-390-2470.
Biz Talk Radio.
And it's our final national segment with Ann Howard, attorney, expert on serial killers. In the end, you're not really able to say what makes Howell tick.
No, I think if I could name one thing as the strongest factor, I think it would be something neurologically wrong with his brain.
So a brain defect.
Maybe he was born with it. Maybe it was created over time. But this diagnosis of paraphilia or sexual sadism.
Sexual sadism. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm not an expert in that.
There are so many subsets of paraphilia out there, and his, of course, was raping prostitutes. No, I don't think there's any easy explanations other than that those crimes gave him an overwhelming sense of power. And see, that's the thing about the sexual sadism and paraphilia. It's not about the sex. I mean, sex is a big part of it, but it's about the power and the need for power. He had a long history of powerlessness in his life.
And he felt powerless because of his mother's illness?
Well, that was a small part of it, but also a long-term incarceration for simply driving without a license. Oh. Throughout his 20s, he was incarcerated. And he was with violent offenders and people who'd robbed banks who were serving less time than him.
Really?
Because he was a habitual offender. And so they kept busting him for simply driving without a license.
And this woman that took his kids, right? Crushed him.
It crushed him. Believe it or not, a serial killer can love his children, and he was crushed that she took those kids and he could not see them. He tells me she had his balls over a barrel. Those were his words, because she would have called the police as soon as he showed up at the doorstep, and he was always in violation of one of his probations, and he'd get locked up, so he couldn't see his kids. He had a lot of anger inside of him, and he took it out on his poor victims.
Innocent victims. Mm-hmm. Tell us how he's doing now. Are you still communicating with him? How's his health? He's gained a ton of weight, right?
Yeah. I mean, he put on almost 100 pounds since he was first arrested for these crimes.
Does he look terrible?
He looks like a big, beefy, hefty guy. He's 48 years old, so I don't think he looks terrible.
Pretty young.
He's got a lot of back problems. He's got very serious diabetes. It runs in his family where one of his brothers died of it. So he's telling me he's getting more symptoms of neuropathy. And so his sugars, his blood levels are off the charts. So he did tell me that his main hope in this life is that he goes to sleep some night and has a heart attack and never wakes up. And that would certainly be the easy way out for him, because he's living in a personal hell right now, sitting alone in that cell in total isolation.
He's in isolation?
He gets 20 minutes twice a day of rec time with other prisoners. Other than that, often he doesn't join them, though. He wants to be alone. He's deeply depressed. He's tried to commit suicide several times since I've known him.
And you still see him? Or
I'm trying to taper it off, Jim. I mean, enough is enough. I occasionally do see him. I'm going to try to keep it down to maybe once or twice a year in the future. But I am the only person who does visit him or write to him.
The only person.
The only. He is reviled. And, you know, with good reason, you know.
Let's talk now about the emotional toll on you. Not only are you going through this for years, but your husband had cancer during this, et cetera.
Yeah. Boy, what a head trip this was. It's a good thing you don't know what you're getting yourself into sometimes. And I think when it really took a toll on me was after September 8th of 2017, when he started to confess all of his crimes to me after he pled guilty. That's when I was confronted with the reality that I was dealing with a monster. And, you know, it's one thing to know it in your head, to know what the DNA evidence said, to read the trial transcripts. It's another thing to look him in the eye and to hear the words coming from his mouth. And especially as an example, I'll give you that I did two Netflix shows in May. They came to my house, 21st Century Serial Killers, and that's a new show, and Inside the Mind of a Serial Killer. So those shows will air next season on Netflix. And there was one particular day of filming, because they were at my house for 4 days, and we went to the crime scene. I interviewed a victim's family member, and we even had footage of me talking to Howell on the phone about his crimes. And there was one day where we went out to the strip where he would pick up many of his victims. And on that day, we were standing outside the motel where one of his victims lived in the final weeks of her life. And emerging from that motel came a drug-addicted prostitute.
Ooh.
And she just looked like I described the victims in my book. Just absolutely skeletal, you know, emaciated and soiled clothing. Oh. And she approached me and asked me for money. And I don't know what it was about seeing that woman, but that night I went home and I just wept. I had to go right up to my bed at 7 o'clock and just lay in my bed and just wept when I realized the horror that Howell would have seen that woman. And where I saw her with pity and compassion, he would have seen her as his next victim. And I think that was just an example of the effect.
It was very stressful.
Very stressful. A lot of panic attacks after. Yeah, a lot of nightmares.
You seem like you suffered more than he did in terms of remorse.
Yeah, I haven't said this to anyone yet, but I think it was really good that a woman wrote this book and not a man.
Because?
Because when he was telling me about what those women suffered in the back of his van, as a woman, I was envisioning what would that have been like. And I don't know if it would be the same if a man told the story. One of his victims, he raped with a shock absorber.
Yes.
You know, and again, in his understated way, she seemed to enjoy it. You know, it was like a sex toy. No, it wasn't.
Yeah, I was going to ask that. You know,
it wasn't like a sex
toy. When he started confessing after he had taken his plea, was he doing this as if this was like just normal talk?
Very matter of fact.
Yeah, very matter of fact. This is just fact. This is what happened.
Which was another reason why the emotional toll was so great, because when I would listen to him, I would try to be as matter of fact as well so that he would continue to speak. Then I'd get into my car and break down crying.
What a way to end it. It's a fascinating book. You won't be able to put it down. It's just out July 10th. Thanks to Ann Howard. The book is His Garden, Conversations with a Serial Killer. What's your blog?
You got to Google Serial Murders in Connecticut, Ann K. Howard, and you'll find my blog because it's got some kind of weird address.
All right. Thanks, Dan Howard. We'll see everybody.
Thanks, Jim.
Well, thanks for being on, by the way. Thanks for coming in studio. And thanks
My
to
pleasure.
Our national audience. We'll see everybody again next Sunday night.
The opinions you hear on Biz Talk Radio are those of the hosts, callers, and guests, and do not necessarily reflect those of this station, Biz Talk Radio, its management, or advertisers. The information on Biz Talk Radio does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. Please consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions about Biz Talk Radio, contact us at 817-274-1609 or at biztalkradio.com.
Biz Talk Radio.